Okay, that is it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening to WNUR 89.3 FM and HD1 Evanston, Chicago. My name is Mira, and I'll be back with you guys in 2 weeks. Next up, we have the news segment.
Thank you. Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Basil Free, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, Evanston's popping boba scene, diving deep into the historic Wilmette Theater, and what comes next after Brat Summer. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. When you're in the mood for a sweet treat, boba is the perfect fix. But in Evanston, the options are almost overwhelming. Gabby Shell finds out which tea houses students prefer.
If you've walked around downtown Evanston, chances are that you've passed by a boba shop. From Kung Fu Tea on Clark to Mogi Tea on Sherman to the newly opened Ume Tea on Church Street, the Evanston boba scene is ubiquitous. But why are there so many boba places? And what draws people towards their favorite locations?
College kids love, like, a silly little drink.
That was Julia Beckendorf, a Medill sophomore and boba fan. Her boba go-to? Happy Lemon, located on the corner of Davis and Chicago.
But I like that place because it's close to campus. It's pretty easy. I think from Allison, it's like literally 5 minutes.
But with a boba shop on virtually every street and the small downtown stretch, convenience can't be the only factor. For Beckendorf, there's a sense of security in sticking to the same store.
I think I'm pretty open to trying like new places or like exploring, but like when there is one place that I like, I feel like I will go back. But I feel like once I've found like one thing on a menu, I'll just get the same thing every time. So that's why I still go to Happy Lemon.
When asked about her favorite Evanston tea house, Nina Gupta, Weinberg freshman and another Happy Lemon devotee, agreed with Beckendorf that its proximity and quality helped Happy Lemon stand out from its competitors.
It's one of the closer ones, and also I've never gotten a drink there that I haven't liked. Like, I got the jasmine green tea, and I think I got the jasmine green milk tea also. Those are both pretty good.
For others, the choice in boba shop is about something a little deeper. Ziye Wong, a former barista at Mogi Tea, noticed a trend in which students were frequenting her store.
Mogi in particular stood out to me as somewhere where a lot of international kids would go to. Yeah, rather than like Happy Lemon, I feel like it's more like everyone goes to it. And I think that's partially because Mogi is a Chinese brand maybe, and Happy Lemon is actually an American brand.
The differences in boba shops aren't just limited to the location and the customer base. While searching for a late-night treat, Wong noticed a significant variation between tea houses.
I was looking at Uber Eats the other day, and cup of tea for their brown sugar was like $6, whereas for Mogi, like, ordering Uber Eats would be like $7 in the cents. So, like, it was like a good percentage, you know, more expensive. The same, like, you know, size.
Part of the difference in price point may come from the quality of the ingredients used. Where Kung Fu Tea uses powders and syrups often in their drinks,
Mogi uses, like, prides itself using real fruit and cooking our own boba every single day. Actually, like, sliced mangoes and putting in the blenders and, like, adding green tea. I thought that was, like, a really authentic, like, you know, kind of drink. It wasn't, like, there was any sort of weird, like, you know, additives or anything like that.
The higher price point does shape the customer base. Because Mogi customers are primarily students,
65% students and, like, another 35%, like, adults.
The cost of the drinks was often a bit of a barrier, too high for it to become a regular habit.
It's a place you go for a treat, you know, like actually to treat yourself.
Generally, the cost of boba tends to be on the pricier side, with 16-ounce drinks ranging in price from $5 to $10. Compared to a coffee of the same size, which often ranges from $4 to $6, it's no wonder that the coffee shops around Evanston are consistently more packed. But the more I talked with these boba connoisseurs, the more I realized that the emptiness may be by design. Unlike the coffee shops, which boast a large seating area and a carefully curated theme, most of the tea houses are minimalistic in decor and space, offering only a handful of chairs to sit in. Beckendorf, raised in the Chicago suburbs, noted that Evanston's shops differ from the tea houses back home.
Around here, I feel like it's kind of like they want you in and out.
Gupta noticed the same thing coming to Northwestern. Back at home, she would spend lots of time at her favorite tea house, Cha House, a North Carolina chain.
Their whole vibe is, like, aesthetic, with, like, plants, and, like, they sell little, like, aesthetic things, like squishies, And it's just really cute. Like, it makes you want to stay there and hang out. But it's nice because I used to go there with my sister and we would study. It just has, like, a good vibe.
Instead of studying at a tea house here, Gupta instead prefers the more spacious cafes, like Colectivo and Coralie. Beyond the aesthetics of Evanston Boba, I wanted to know what kept people coming back for more. I set out to find what was in the cup of perfect boba. I started with Wong, who told me what it takes to make the best cup.
Memorization skills, love, and district manager.
Fair enough, but I wanted something a little more concrete. Gupta, who ran a boba review account back in North Carolina, broke down her big three categories.
The first one was an overall rating, taking into account like everything, including like the customer service, the drink, like the menu and how many like options they had. And then we had like a milk tea rating or fruit tea. And then we had a boba rating, which is like kind of subjective because it depends on like what type of consistency or texture you like in boba.
For Beckendorf, the quality of the tapioca pearls was the make or break ingredient in a good drink.
It's pretty hard to mess up just like a drink or if you're just getting like a black tea or whatever. But if your boba's, like, undercooked, it really just, like, ruins it for me.
I suppose it's no surprise that it's the boba that makes, well, boba good. To close out my piece, I wanted to get some good drink recommendations for the next time I'm in the mood for a sweet little treat. Wong told me the most popular drink she made at Moki.
The most common order I saw was mango pomelo tea slush.
Yum. But for those who are less fruit-inclined like me, Gupta and Beckendorf had their favorite drinks to share.
I like the milk teas, and I like more of like the earthy flavor, like oolong or matcha. And I like milk teas. And then in terms of the boba, I like it when it's like when you get it in the cup and it's like warm at the bottom and you can feel it and it's like fresh.
My go-to drink is taro smoothie with boba, and then like you modify the ice to like half, I think, which is kind of weird because I don't know, I just don't like that much ice in my drinks. And then you do the sweetness at like 75%.
Writing the story definitely worked up my sweet tooth, but at least now I know what my next treat will be. See you guys next time. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Schell.
After over 100 years, the historic Wilmette Theater is still engaging audiences through their community-based programming. Amelia Donhauser has the story.
After 100 years of operation, is still engaging audiences in the community through unique forms of art programming, entertainment, and givebacks. Despite their efforts, they still face funding challenges, like most local theaters across the country. Amelia Donhauser has the story.
And we've had our ups and downs with, you know, challenges.
That was Amy Falkowski, a Wilmette resident and program director at the theater, who started in 2021 in the midst of the pandemic and revamped the theater. She says starting in the middle of the pandemic was particularly challenging.
So when we first opened, it was like, yay, you're here. And then it was like, oh wait, but now we have to kind of close down a little bit, or now everyone has to wear masks and show COVID tests or show that they were vaccinated. So that was really hard.
Falkowski, who initially wanted to be a member of the board of directors at the theater, saw the program director job and realized it made sense, she says, considering her background and interests in the arts.
When I was in graduate school, I had taken history of film, and when I was in undergraduate school, I'd worked in a small independent movie theater for 2 out of the 4 years that I was there, so I'd always had an interest in movies and especially like independent movies.
She also said she noticed a shift in new businesses in downtown Wilmette and wanted to preserve the theater.
I saw that change was happening, and I wanted to make sure that the theater wasn't part of the demolition, but was a part of the sort of renaissance.
She believes that they continue to grow and gain more support in the community each year because of their programming.
So we do the movies, and so we try to do a balance between family fun movies and stuff like that, and then, you know, more of the independent and foreign films and things like that. But then also we do live comedy, live bands, we do a story slam.
Even though the theater is a non-profit, Falkowski still wants to give back and engage the community.
We do a lot of like children's rentals and other children's activities. We work closely with the village to do things like these, like the historic months and stuff like that. So we just did Hispanic Heritage Month, where we put on a free movie for that. And we'll do like Women's History Month, Black History Month, Asian American Pacific Islander Month, and all those kinds of things. So
last winter, she says they ran an event called Rock for Socks, where the entry fee to the concert was a bundle of socks.
So those were donated to the unhoused who needed, you know, socks. And I think we gathered like, I don't know, 3,500 socks or something like that.
Yet, she says receiving funding for programming and renovations for the theater can be challenging.
It's hard to run a nonprofit in an affluent part of the city or part of the country and try to convince, you know, grants and stuff like that, that we need that money. It's like, well, you live in a wealthy community, shouldn't they give you money? You're like, yeah, they should, you know, but like, so should you.
Right now, she says they're fundraising to replace the original marquee.
Our marquee is crazy old, and, you know, the letters fall off, and so we would like to have, you know, to be able to restore our original marquee, and that takes money.
Falkowski says what makes a local theater special is how it's community-oriented, and kids can learn their independence there, unlike a big chain theater.
So this is a, you know, a community place. They can come and tell me their order. You know, and it's not a big scary, you know, megaplex or something like that. They can ride their bikes up to the theater and park their bikes out front. It's small. The kids can come in on their own. Their parents can drop them off, and they're here by themselves. I mean, we're not babysitters by any means, but it's very, like, cozy and comfy and safe in that regard.
Sam Neamy, who saw an afternoon showing of the new, highly anticipated film Saturday Night in one of their two theaters, says watching the movie there made her experience even better.
I thought it was a great movie. I had a lot of fun watching it. I think the environment definitely had a lot to do with that, too.
Unique events and the history of the theater is what makes it special for Falkowski.
You can't go to one of the big box places and see live comedy or see a local band. That's just not going to happen. It's important. Yeah. And it's also a part of the history, you know?
Neamy says that it was her first time at the theater, but is already looking forward to more programming and going again.
If you haven't been to the Wilmette Theater, you should definitely go. It's adorable. And the marquee outside the front is just, like, iconic.
For WNUR News, I'm Amelia Donhouse.
Brat Summer was a cultural moment, but what comes next? Broadum? Fantastic Mr. Fox Fall? Reporter Mika Ellison spoke with Northwestern students to see what they think is coming up next.
Humans tend to attach a lot of importance to seasons. Our holidays, activities, and even our mythologies usually revolve around the dependable cycle of winter, spring, summer, and fall. But every so often, a season comes around that feels different, special, worthy of, perhaps, a particular name. I'm not talking about Tomato Girl Summer or Short King Spring. I'm not even talking about the Year of the Boar and Jackie Robinson. I'm talking about Brat Summer. Brat Summer gets its name and its signature neon green aesthetic from the album of the same name by Charlie XCX, which was released on June 7th, 2024, and quickly became a cultural phenomenon. The album cover was iconic and extremely copyable, which could have been one of the reasons it went so viral so quickly. But Brat Summer was more than just the music or the album cover.
Like, yeah. I feel like Brat Summer is, like, unhinged, like, female rage. It's, like, angry but sexy.
Brat Summer started as a celebration of club classics and pop music. But it quickly became something more. Brat Summer is a philosophy, an album, an ethos, and a rallying cry all at once. It was so popular, Charlie XCX released an entire album of remixes on October 11th, featuring artists like Ariana Grande and Caroline Palacher. So that begs the question, are we heading for a remix of Brat Summer, but autumnal? Or is there a new cultural commodity on the horizon, poised to take over? To answer, I asked Northwestern students to pitch me the sequel to Brat Summer. Would it be a Pesto Fall? A Gregory Allen Isaacov Autumn? Here's what they said.
I can see apple could turn yellow or green.
And I believe it's Democracy Fall. Because the American election is on everybody's minds, and we only hope that that democracy succeeds this one time.
That was Junior Ashna Rai, whose practical suggestion evoked the sense of a rather frenetic fall season, full of mail-in ballots for students far from home. But Madil Jair Eleni Tekos had a much different vision for the coming season.
It's like enlightenment fall. I feel like we're like coming back to our roots. Like we're, it's not quite dark academia, but I feel like it's like reflective of like Brad Summer, of like what just happened. I feel like it's thoughtful.
Unlike Tekos' more philosophical interpretation of the prompt, librarian assistant Pega Gureshi gave her pitch a slogan, and hers was a little more connected to pop culture, invoking a certain iconic baby hippo.
I think that it's moodang fall. I think we should all be moist, plump, and ungovernable.
Of course, none of these suggestions are mutually exclusive. It can be moodang fall and brat autumn. Other students, like Weinberg senior Peter Ryan and McCormick junior Victoria Laguerre, had much more practical reasons for their picks.
This is baseball fall. Baseball's on the up. Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers, I think, are as popular a baseball team as there's been in a few years. Both teams from New York are still in, so I think there are probably more people watching the baseball playoffs this year than there have been a long time.
Formula fall, because I'm on Formula One Race Club at Northwestern. We make an electric vehicle from scratch every year.
Weinberg senior Grace Nickram didn't have a name for her fall, but she did have a goal. And the sense that this particular season, for her at least, was more significant than others.
This fall is all about enjoying little things, like watching the leaves fall off the trees and making apple cider, because it's senior year and we have to take it all in.
So maybe it's frazzled Englishwoman fall, perhaps audiobook autumn. Whatever you decide to make the focus of your season, it should be something that lets you appreciate the little things, and perhaps also female rage. For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
Thanks, Mika, for that story. I know that I've been bumping Brat all day long. The cooling fall temperatures are about to rise again, with sunny conditions this weekend. The fluctuating temps are posing a threat to a classic fall phenomenon, sweater weather. Here's Anavi Prakash on this week's Fair Weather Friends.
Good evening, sunshines. I'm Anavi, and welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a sneak peek into this weekend's local weather. We have some weird weather coming up, so stay tuned. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends. The weather has slowly been cooling, and it's finally beginning to feel like fall, which means it's sweater weather, my favorite season. It immediately makes me feel relaxed and excited for the piles of leaves waiting to be jumped in and crisp air. However, this weekend, the sweaters will have to be put away because we're returning to sunny days with a high of 69 degrees Fahrenheit on Saturday. That's 21 degrees Celsius. On Sunday, Evanston will hit a high of 74 degrees Fahrenheit, which in Celsius is 23 degrees. Both days will have a low of 55 degrees Fahrenheit or 13 degrees Celsius. This warm weather isn't going to last through the winter months, though. The National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration announced its winter outlook Thursday, and the Great Lakes region is expected to have wetter than average conditions this winter. The NOAA credits La Niña for the wet conditions. La Niña is a period when the ocean surface temperatures in the central and east central equatorial Pacific cool, leading to cooler temperatures. Highs in the greater Chicago area are supposed to drop later in the fall, and La Niña's wet and stormy conditions are predicted to last from December to February. But until then, temperatures will fluctuate between being warm and being cool, breezy sweater weather. So, keep those sweaters on standby. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Fair Weather Friends. As you enjoy the shining sun, don't forget to start gearing up for a snowy and rainy winter coming our way so very soon. In Evanston, Illinois, Anavi Prakash, WNUR News.
Personally, very excited for sweater weather. Thanks for that, Anavi. All right, taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Members of Northwestern's chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace constructed a second Gaza Solidarity Sukkah at The Rock around 4 p.m. earlier today, coming just 2 days after university officials and police officers dismantled their original structure. Around 8 students helped set up the sukkah, joined by more than 20 participants who were led in prayer by Rabbi Brant Rosen. In a statement posted to the group's Instagram, JVPNU said the placement of the sukkah at The Rock was, quote, a last resort against campus repression due to an exception in the university's new demonstration policy. Is it raining cats and dogs? Maybe. Adoptions are now officially underway at the new Evanston Animal Shelter following a ribbon-cutting ceremony around 2 weeks ago. Now in a building of 8,800 square feet, the shelter features more room for bigger cages, an outdoor dog run, and a new, quote, kitty condo, where cats can climb and play. If you're looking for a new pet, adoption days are on Wednesdays from 5 to 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday afternoons from 1 to 4 p.m. Former Bears quarterback Jay Cutler was arrested Thursday in Tennessee for allegedly driving intoxicated and allegedly offering the driver, he rear-ended $2,000. Cutler, 41, allegedly rear-ended another vehicle and was slurring his words with bloodshot eyes, according to police. He initially told police that he did not consume any alcohol and that he had, quote, a little bit when questioned further. Finally, following the death of One Direction band member Liam Payne at age 31, fellow band members Harry Styles, Louis Tomlinson, Niall Horan, and Zayn Malik released a statement yesterday saying they are, quote, completely devastated by his death. Payne died Wednesday after falling into the interior patio of a hotel in Buenos Aires, officials in Argentina said. That's all for WNUR News at 6. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Mika Ellison, and our reporters are Gabby Schell, Amelia Donhauser, Mika Ellison, and Anavi Prakash. I'm Basil Free. Catch our next newscast Monday, October 21st. Now, back to scheduled programming.